This evening is, if I remember rightly, is the second of our meditation evenings on a Saturday. And last week we talked about the practice of, if you like, mindful awareness or silent awareness or Jipin Gang, the mind in the middle, or the whatever name you want to call it. And I was explaining that this practice of just a kind of careful and mindful awareness of one's own thoughts, perceptions, memories, feelings, body sensations, emotions, and this is a very essential precursor to metta meditation. Actually, Ajahn Mahachachai emphasizes that it's something which goes along with every kind of meditation. No matter what kind of meditation you're doing, you should always do some of this kind of practice. And so it's like a partner for every other kind of meditation. And through doing that practice, then we gain a level of clarity and understanding of our minds. And one of the things that that does is it enables us to get a little bit of distance from our emotions and feelings and so on. So we're aware of them, but we're also aware of them as passing things. We're not aware, they're not something which is dominating us and leading us astray. And this particular aspect is very important, one of the important benefits of that practice. So that we get a degree of objectivity and coolness about our own emotions, and thoughts and beliefs and so on. Of course, I'm not here talking about, like, you know, complete liberation from them. Just like a degree of being able to reflect on them. And this is something that it always seems to me to distinguish people who've done some serious meditation from most other people, is that people who've done some meditation are able to reflect on their emotional states. And to not sort of blindly grasp them and take them to be themselves, but they're able to reflect on them. Even if they still do grasp at them, they're still aware of the fact that they're grasping. At least this is where we should be aiming. And so this preliminary practice clears the mind. It clears the emotions. And we're aiming to get to a place of equanimity where we can feel, you can almost have an inner awareness where you feel your sense of consciousness, sense of awareness centered in the middle of your physical body, usually in the heart. But to actually feel that and to feel your consciousness being located or grounded in such a place, and your field of awareness spreading itself out around that center and just being content to be there. So starting from this equanimous and mindful place, we're then poised in the ideal way to develop metta. And when we develop metta coming from this kind of place, it won't be a metta or a loving kindness based on attachment, because we have that degree of equanimity beforehand. And so when the sense of attachment does come up through the metta meditation, which it will from time to time, then you'll be able to notice that, you'll be able to realize that, because you've got something to contrast it with. And so you'll be able to correct it. So this is one of the reasons why this particular technique as taught by Ajahn Chachai is so wonderful, because it gives you all of the checks and balances which you need to supplement and correct any problems which you might find in your metta meditation. As these talks go on over the next few weeks, I'll gradually introduce more and more of these kinds of things so that you have more and more aids and tools to help you in the practice. So for this evening, what we'll talk about is the very beginnings of doing metta practice. Actually starting to try and see if we can get in touch with that feeling of loving kindness. So the process or the course of the meditation, as Mahachachai takes it, is derived from a scheme which is found in the Visuddhimagga. And so if you're interested to look at the textual sources, then the Visuddhimagga has this kind of is the basic source for this. Although in terms of the interpretation of certain ideas in terms of the nimitta and some other aspects, Dhammacaccha's account differs from the Visuddhimagga in some degree. Also, he adds some aspects and some skillful means not found in the Visuddhimagga. But one part of the, in particular, I might say what I'm referring to here is the detailed description of how to develop the metta nimitta is something which I've only ever found in Ajahn Mahachachai's teachings and not elsewhere. One excellent thing which the Visuddhimagga does give in its section on metta is it gives a lot of different skillful means for eradicating anger and lots of different reflections and sort of tools that you can use for getting rid of anger and trying to free the mind, lighten the mind, you know, things like reflecting on the person that you are angry with as being just the four elements or many different kinds of things. So if you're interested to look for some things to get over your feelings of anger and annoyance, then please check out the Visuddhimagga. That particular section is very useful. So the scheme that's taught there uses, in order to develop metta, this idea of the four people. One's starting with oneself, the loved person, the neutral person, and the disliked person. So the idea of starting metta meditation with oneself sometimes strikes people as being both theoretically and practically problematic. On a theoretical level, then, of course, we're surely trying to transcend self-love and develop love for all beings. And so developing love for oneself would seem to be counterproductive. So the canonical justification for the practice is found in a few places, but most centrally in the basic Brahma Vihara chant, which uses the term Sambhattataya, which means to all as to oneself. And so the idea which seems to be expressed there and which is also expressed elsewhere is like of taking oneself as the example and then using that to develop love and kindness for all living beings. The idea of using the loved person, of course, is found quite explicitly in the Metta Sutta. The love of a mother for her only child in the same way one should love all living beings. And so what we're doing here is we're trying to develop our emotions in a careful and conscious way. And so there's some kind of theoretical rationale behind that, behind the whole scheme. In fact, the scheme itself corresponds to the three feelings. So the oneself and the loved person correspond to a pleasant feeling because one's usually attached to these people. The neutral person, of course, corresponds to a neutral feeling. And the disliked person, of course, corresponds with the unpleasant feeling. And these three feelings also correspond with the three principal defilements. Oneself and the loved person corresponds with the defilement of greed. Neutral person corresponds with the defilement of ignorance or delusion. And the disliked person, of course, corresponds with the defilement of hatred. And so this particular scheme kind of sits very nicely within the broader spectrum of the Buddha's teachings. And we can see that it kind of makes sense. It's quite a logical, quite a rational scheme. So that's like the theoretical aspect of it, but the other problem which many people raise is the practical problem, which is that perhaps especially for people grown up in a modern environment and perhaps in a Western environment or a Christian environment perhaps, I'm not sure, people hate themselves. And so it's very hard for them to develop loving kindness for themselves. So I might talk a little bit about that later, and I'll just kind of leave that to one side for now. And I'll just kind of describe the overall course of meditation as taught by Ajahn Mahachachai, and then we'll go back and look at the problem later on, maybe in subsequent weeks. So for this week, let's just start with doing loving kindness for ourselves. Now, what is the rationale for doing this? Well, of course, according to Buddhist theory, that our primary mode of attachment and concern is attachment to ourselves. This is the reason why we've got reborn. We're attached to having our own experience, to experience our own pleasure, and so on. And so this is what's driven us to being reborn. And so our consciousness is primarily bound up with ourselves. This is not an ethical statement. It's not saying it should be or shouldn't be like that. It's merely a statement of how things are. And so that's a theoretical level. On a practical level, of course, we can experience that. We can see that this is, in fact, the case. And that, you know, most of our thoughts and concerns are all for ourselves. And when we get hungry, we want to feed ourselves. And when we want to look at something, we want to look and see it with our eyes. When we want to brush our teeth, we brush our own teeth. So most of our thoughts and so on are concerned with ourselves. And I think if we were to analyze it mathematically, you'd probably find statistically that the vast majority of all of our thoughts and concerns are for ourselves. Again, this is not an ethical statement. It's not saying that this is good or bad or anything. It's merely acknowledging where most of us are at. And so we start out where it's most important. And the simile that I like to use here is the simile of a king who struggles and gains control of a city. And when he's gained control of that city in accordance with the ancient Indian custom, he goes and subdues the cities around him to make sure that he can get rid of his enemies surrounding. So he leaves with his army and goes and conquers all the cities and the states neighboring his own. But of course, while he's away, he hasn't set up the government properly, he hasn't set up the security properly, he hasn't looked after the needs of the people properly. And so when he goes out, there's a revolution, and he's overthrown. By the time he gets back, there's a new king, a new army, and then he loses control of his own city, and of course loses control of all the other cities that he's conquered as well. So this is something like the justification for why we need to develop metta for ourselves. If we don't do that, then the metta for others will remain shallow, because it'll remain unstable, because it's not built on the firm foundation. It's not built on healthy foundations. And I think if you were to speak with somebody who's versed in developmental psychology, they would also tell you a similar thing, that a child and a baby, when it's first growing up, first needs to learn its attachment to itself and to look after its own needs, and gradually develops these kind of attachments to its parents and so on, and gradually learns to consider the needs of others, and gradually extends the sphere of its concern. And so this is where, by following this way in metta meditation, we're simply following this very natural and very normal course of nature. So we start out doing metta for ourselves. The first thing that we do when we've stilled our mind and gained a reasonable degree of clarity and comprehension through doing the mindful awareness practice for, say, 10 minutes or so at the start, and then We keep our awareness focused in the heart, and we say the words of loving kindness, may I be happy. Of course, there are many different ways of formulating this particular phrase. And sometimes people like to make a big deal of it. They want to say it in one way and not another way or whatever. But please don't make such a big deal about the words that you're using. You want to keep it as simple as possible. So just may I be happy is the simplest way of doing it. If you feel that that's a bit short as a phrase, you want to say something longer, then you can say something like, may I be happy and suffer no more. May I be happy and suffer no more. May I be happy and suffer no more. This is another way that you could phrase it. But please don't proliferate about this. And I've spoken about this a number of times, but it's quite true. And I did this retreat at Wat Buddha Dhamma a couple of years ago. And some people came up and complained about using the word may. They didn't like the word may. I don't like may. How may I be may? And somebody else came up and complained about using the word I. It was like self and stuff. I'll get I as well. I don't know I. And then other people came up and complained about the word happy. Happy is no good. You know, is happy. The only one which escaped was B, which was, I guess, so innocuous that nobody thought of it. And
Sarah Bante, I was at that one.
Really? Were you one of the complainers?
I think I was. Going through a period. There's at least two of us.
Yeah, that's cute.
Is that why you're telling
me? No, I'd kind of forgotten, but there you go. So, don't get too hung up on the words. Sometimes people don't like the word happy because it's too trivial. But in fact, that's precisely why it's good. Because we don't want to be taking it too seriously. Okay, so if you want to say, oh, may I experience ultimate bliss or something like this, then it sort of gets a bit pretentious, doesn't it? Whereas happy, we know what happy is, yeah? We know, you know, even a little baby can be happy, or little puppy dog can be happy or something like that. And so we're not taking it so seriously. Happy is what we are at Christmas time. Happy is what we are when we get a present. And it's that kind of lightness and playfulness is very useful, especially in the early stages of metta meditation. So when we're doing the meditation, is the first thing that you do is to make the words sound good. Okay, so don't worry about the meaning of them, don't worry about getting the feeling of metta, don't worry about anything else. Just enunciate and articulate the words in your mind as clearly and as well as you possibly can. As Ajahn Mahachachai said, like Shakespeare, mayest thou be happy, or something like that. So what you're doing here, by articulating the words clearly to oneself, one's doing a number of things. First of all, that helps with just your mindfulness and clear comprehension. It brings a level of precision and care to what you're doing, so that you're not just kind of slopping the words out. Yeah? It's a careful process. It gives a level of energy to the mind because you're not being lazy about what you're doing. You're not just sort of drifting along and drifting in and out of your meditation and not really sure what you're doing. You're very clear about what you're doing, and there's an energy behind those words. And it also gives a focus and direction, like a solid focus to the meditation. In fact, by the words of the meditation are exercising the two jhana factors, vitakka and vichara. So we talked about this earlier and explained how these factors in jhana are more subtle. They're not actual kind of verbalized thinking processes. But of course, they're, they're similar to, in some ways, these verbalized thinking processes. Obviously, why the same word is used. The Buddha, like all of us, has to use the words that are available in his environment, in his language. And so he was extending the ordinary language usage of these words into a technical or specialized usage of the words. And we shouldn't be surprised about this, and we shouldn't make a problem out of it. You know, just as in, for example, ordinary language, the word organic has a certain meaning. We talk about organic vegetables, and you know, we mean vegetables grown without artificial fertilizers, and so on. And if we're doing chemistry, then the word organic has a specialized meaning. Organic chemistry is chemistry dealing with the various compounds of carbon. And so we recognize that it's very normal and necessary that in specialized fields that words are taken out of their everyday usage and are given more specialized meanings. And so this is what happens with vitaka vichara, that they've been, in jhana factors, they've been taken out of their everyday language and used with a specialized meaning. But that specialized meaning is not completely different from the everyday language. Okay, it's derived from it. And so it gives us a clue to what are those things that help us develop the jhana factors of vitaka and vichara. So one of the ways that we can help develop that is by using our faculty of thought in meditation, especially in these preliminary stages of meditation. By bringing the words, may I be happy, into the mind again and again and again, we are lifting the mind up to a particular object. We're pointing and focusing the mind in a particular direction. If you want to think about this in terms of vitaka vichara, then you could think of the vitaka of this as being the clear and distinct formulation of each sound and each syllable of the words as you're saying them. The vichara is the evenness and steadiness with which one continues to say the phrase over a period of time. Okay, so this is one way that you could apply those two categories in this particular context.
Ante, is it a problem if there's a tune to it?
I think it would be distracting. But I'm not sure, I've never done it.
If it becomes a chant, that's a problem.
Well, you can do chanting, that's fine, but the chant is not metta, meditation as such. I mean, chanting and tunes and things are useful in that they get stuck in your mind and you can actually help your concentration by sort of clearing your mind and just focusing on one thing. But the problem is that it tends to draw your attention to the tune itself rather than to the developing the metta. So best, especially if you're developing the meditation, best to try to ignore those things and just stick with the meditation method as closely as you can until you know what you're doing. Otherwise you're likely to just end up with a mishmash. Yeah. That's not to say that that can't be used in other contexts, but in this particular context, I wouldn't recommend it. I don't know if you know, Alex, the story of the barber who ordained as a monk. The Buddha said, I allow a shaving kit, a razor blade, to all of the monks, except those who used to be the barbers in their past life. So the first thing we want to do, so this is like the first step in our metta meditation. We've cleared our mind and got a sense of clear comprehension through the mindful awareness practice. And next we actually start doing the metta. And the first thing we start doing with the metta is making the words clear and distinct and steady. And you bring... This is a stage of doing, so this is a doing part of the meditation. You can actually consciously do this, and you do that with the qualities that you want to develop in your meditation later on. So you do it with a sense of care, the sense of evenness, the sense of clarity, the sense of steadiness, the sense of commitment, which are going to help you to overcome the hindrances. So this is the first stage. When you feel good about that, when you feel that you have actually got that well established, that the words are rolling along clearly and steadily, and that you've brought that degree of care to it to make it strong. So take time with that. Don't just sort of not think these things are important. They're very important. The more you pay attention to the foundational practices, the quicker your meditation will go. So take time and care to do that. When you feel content, you feel that that's good enough, then you bring in like another dimension or introduce another dimension to the practice, which is to reflect on the meaning of the words. Okay? And when I say reflect on the meaning, I don't mean to start thinking about what does metta mean. Okay? I don't. You keep on with the same words. You're not using any other words in the mind. You keep on with the same words of metta. But you just like allow the meaning of the metta to become conscious to you. You like allow that dimension. Almost like you're reminding yourself of that meaning. And you don't have to worry about it. You know what metta means. Okay, you've all felt it. Metta is that blissful feeling of wishing well, a feeling of love and joy. Okay, so that's all you really need to know. You don't need to have any complicated or very detailed analyses of what the meaning of metta is. Just that is good enough. You'll learn about it through your experience. And you'll need to know what it tastes like. Okay, not what the theory of metta is, but what is the taste of metta. And so at this stage, you reflect to yourself that wish, that wholesome wish for your own well-being and happiness. And so this gives like an energy or direction to the mind. There's an intention there. That wish comes with a slight movement of the mind. That's why metta is, according to the Abhidhamma, is included in the jetasikas under the sankhara khanda, one of the sankharas, because it's a movement in a sense, an emotion. And so there's like a fluidity to it, a flow, which of course is a very still flowing. There's the famous simile from Ajahn Chah is like still flowing water. So it's not movement in the sense of running about all over the place, but it's just movement in the sense of being a flow, an energy. And so by reflecting on the meaning of the word metta and allowing that to come into consciousness, this is by making that clear. And then you're like extending or enriching the words of metta, putting feeling into it, putting heart into it. So this is like the second step. The first step is to just clarify the sounds of the words. Second step is to reflect on the meaning of the words. And the third step is to invoke or touch the actual feeling of metta. And so this is where things start to get fun. Because you're starting to realize actually what this metta is. Now, in principle, if you've done the different stages of the meditation up until now successfully, that is, if you've started out by more or less clearing your mind of obstructive emotions, negativity, and if you've carefully and mindfully developed the words of metta, and allow the mind to reflect on the meaning of that, so your intention is very pure, the mind's been developed in that way, then it's natural that the feeling of metta will follow on from these things. But this is something that's very individual, and it's something which we can't really control. So whereas the first stages of the metta meditation itself, I emphasized, were in a sense, doing the things that you can just consciously sit down and do, then contacting the feeling of metta is not necessarily something you can do in the same way. But that, however, needs to be qualified, because in fact you can do it once you have a bit of skill and you know what you're doing. Then you can simply call up the feeling of metta. Okay, you can simply do it. But before you know that, before you've had that experience, then it's a bit hard. You're not quite sure what you're doing. So this is a bit tricky. And so this really is the most crucial point in the whole meditation, is actually getting in touch with the feeling of metta. If you can do that and keep it going, then the rest of the meditation will come together. If you can't, if you really try and do everything you can and you just honestly can't get any feeling of metta going, then you probably need to try another meditation object. So if the feeling of metta comes up, if it actually appears, then the way that it appears will be quite diverse, especially at these early stages. It can appear in many different ways and manifest in very different forms to people. The only thing you really have to worry about is that it be a feeling which is, in a sense, associated with and together with the words of metta that you've developed. So there's some relationship between them. It's not a distraction from them. For example, you know, maybe if you're doing the metta and then suddenly you think of a joke or something that you heard before you came to sit meditation, and you kind of want to laugh and you have a happy feeling because you're laughing at the joke, well, obviously that's dissociated from your meditation object. So the feeling of metta is in some way associated with the meditation object. This is one thing. And the second thing is that the feeling of metta has to be pleasant. It's a happy feeling. These are the only two real criteria, okay, for what metta is, or what it feels like, or what it has to fulfill at this early stage. Apart from that, it can appear in very many different ways. It might appear for a short time or a long time. It might be very weak, it might be very strong, it might shoot up like a physical feeling through the body, it might be, you know, all the kind of the symptoms of rapture which people have. All of those are likely to happen at this time. And so many people have very strong experiences of rapture quite easily in metta meditation. So you feel the hairs on the back of your neck standing up, or you feel like the kind of bolts of lightning coming through the body, or you feel tingling all over your skin, or the body might jerk, etc., etc., and all of these kinds of things. Or you feel these kind of waves of bliss showering over the body. And so on and so forth. These things are all quite common. Another one that's quite common is tears coming out of the eyes, tears of joy. So all of these are quite common, and nothing to get too worked up about it. Just when these things happen, just keep on going. Don't get excited by them, don't get worried by them, and just leave them to one side and get on with your meditation. Maybe none of those things will happen to you. Maybe the feeling of metta when it comes will be quite soft and gentle. Maybe it won't have any of those overpowering qualities. So that's fine, that's good. Or maybe you don't have the feeling of metta at all. And if you can't have the feeling of metta at all, then that's usually falls into one of two cases or two categories. One kind of category is that actually, the feeling of metta is there, but you don't recognize it. It's hiding. You don't quite know what you're looking for. You don't quite know what it is when you found it. And it's difficult to say, but I suspect that quite a few people are like this when they start out, that actually there is metta there, but they're just not really sure what they're looking for it, and they doubt about it. So in a sense, this is a need to tune in to that wavelength. It's kind of there, but you're looking on the wrong wavelength, and so you need to maybe hunt around a bit until you can feel it. Be a bit patient and just keep on focusing. not being worried about it or despairing, but just sort of trying to look. And then sometimes it's almost as if you turn around, oh, there it is. It was there all along, but I wasn't looking at it in the right way. So if that's the case, then usually once you've learnt how to tune in, then it shouldn't be too much of a problem. Okay, you just need to get that, oh, and once you know, then next time, then you should be right to actually get it going. So that's not too much of a problem. And then for other people, the feeling of metta is just not there at all. And, you know, maybe you've tried, done everything right, prepared the meditation right, and reflected about it and so on, and then investigated and you know, looked inside yourself, and really you just can't see anything. And so what do you do then? Well, the first thing to do is just be patient. It takes a while to get it together. Don't be in any rush. Try it a few times and just wait and see. Maybe something will happen. Okay? Even if you don't get any feeling of metta going, at least by keeping the thoughts of metta going, then you're practicing the right thought of the Eightfold Path. And remember in the Dvaita Vitakka Sutta, the Buddha said that you know, even just thinking these thoughts of harmlessness and so on, you can think them all day and all night and never cause any harm or problem for anybody. And so that's the second factor of the Eightfold Path. That's not a bad thing to be doing. So you can just keep on doing that for a long time, never mind. But of course, just if it stays as the thought, as the Buddha said in the Dvaita Vitakka Sutta, then that's not enough to take the mind to samadhi. So eventually you want to try to make, arouse the feeling up. You won't get into samadhi based on just the thought of metta. You need to get the feeling of metta as well. And so there's various tricks of the trade that you can use to try to bring the feeling of metta up. One trick of the trade that you can use that Ajahn Mahachachai recommends is to kind of stop, come out of doing the metta mindfully, and just to recollect your family and loved ones, anyone who's dear to you, and to just make a mental intention or volition of sharing the merit of your practice with them and of wishing them well. Just going through the people that you know and just wishing that they that all you're doing and the efforts that you're making will be of benefit for them. And this is one way of making the mind happy, gladdening the mind, bringing into mind those people who make us happy. So this is one way. Another way is to use your memory. Okay? And so to use your memory to remember a time when you felt metta. So this could either be a time when you were giving metta, you felt the metta within yourself, or it could be a time when you were receiving metta, or it could be a time when you were witnessing somebody giving metta. Doesn't really matter, because in all of those cases you're within the sphere, you're within the circle of metta, and you're partaking of it. And so you have the memory of that thing. And, you know, there may be some kind of memory. We all have memories some kind of time of something positive and very joyous. For me, when I think of that, the memory that comes most readily to mind is a little incident that happened when I was in Bodhinyana Monastery. And at that time, Bhante Gunaratana, Bhanteji, was visiting. And some of the Anagarikas had found near the boundaries of the monastery, they'd found an injured lamb. And some of the farmers adjacent to Bodhinyana keep sheep, and occasionally they wander through the fence, which is not maintained all that well, and get onto the monastery property. And so in this case it was like an injured lamb which had somehow got onto the monastery. And so they picked it up and they put it in like a cardboard box with a rug or something like that, and they carried it up to the main building. And when they brought it up and Bhanteji saw it, I can still remember very so vividly in my mind just the immediate metta that he had. He just looking at that little lamb, and his he just put his hand out incredibly gently and delicately, very, very tender, just to put his his hand just on the little lamb's head, so gently, and bringing it. Was just quite amazing to see for me that gesture of this very, very pure and tender loving kindness. So for me, I can always, that's just like a precious jewel which I have in my memory. And I can always bring that up if I want to, and just to remember that purity and softness of loving kindness. So we all have these things somewhere. We all have these jewels in our hearts, in our memory. And so we make use of them when we need to. If we need to make the feeling of metta come up, we just recall those events, recall what happened, the kind words, the kind actions, the feeling, what that was like. And then that can make the feeling of metta come up. We all know that memory is very powerful for evoking emotion, and we have very strong emotional responses to our memories. So doing that can help us to bring the feeling of metta up. So this is like the second method. The first one is like sharing of merits, second one using memory. The third one is, instead of using memory, using something in the present moment to bring the feeling of metta up, something which maybe can help to evoke metta. So maybe, for example, one monk who's a friend of mine, he used to use a picture of little baby lion cubs he kept in his kuti for this specific purpose. And whenever he felt his meditation was getting too dry, he'd get this photo out and look at the lion cubs, and his heart would just melt because they were just so cute. So this is what you can do. You can keep a teddy bear next to your meditation cushion. This is why I use a teddy bear on my metta retreats. And highly recommended, of course, is Nut the baby polar bear. And so keep a few pictures of Nut around to help you. Or whatever it is, anything that's going to make you feel, you can use that to give yourself a feeling of metta. So that's a few skillful means. Of course, there's an infinite number of these kinds of skillful means. You can always try different things. But then just one more I'll mention for now, and this is the method of pretending to do metta meditation. And this one I quite like, because sometimes we put self-imposed limitations. So we think, oh, I can't do metta, or I'm no good, or whatever. And so rather than trying to battle with that, you just kind of put yourself in the posture of someone who's doing metta, and you don't do metta meditation, but you play the part of an actor who's playing somebody. You're an actor who's playing somebody who's doing metta meditation. So you don't actually do metta meditation, you pretend to do metta meditation. And you don't actually have metta, but you pretend to have metta. Okay, so you don't think, oh, well, it would be nice, you know, to actually call up the feeling of metta, but I won't call up the feeling of metta. I'll pretend to call up the feeling of metta, and I'll act as if I have that. And it's one of the kind of things in human, funny things about human behavior is that sometimes we put ourselves in that position, then it makes us actually feel like that. And so if we all know that if we make our face look like it's in a smile, then it tends to make us happier. If we make our face look like it's in a frown, then it tends to make us sadder. And so you put yourself in that posture of someone's who's doing metta meditation. You do it all in inverted commas. So you can keep a kind of ironical distance from it. So you can sort of retain your kind of cynicism and so on about it. Oh yeah, just playing around, and just kind of do it like that. And then, oh, it turns out to be real in the end. Yeah. So this is another way that you can do it. And it's just playing games with perception, playing games with the mind. So these are some ways that you can use to help you to actually evoke the feeling of metta. And that's a really crucial moment in the practice, to being able to evoke that feeling. Once the feeling is there, the next really crucial step is to be able to sustain it and develop it. And this is, I guess, what really distinguishes a meditation technique from just having feelings. You know, normally we have feelings, they just come and they go and so on. But what we're doing here is to consciously develop those feelings in the way that we want to. So the way to consciously develop the metta meditation, the way to make sure that it doesn't just disappear, is that when it appears, when you notice the feeling arising, then pay attention to that, focus the mind on it, not kind of, you know, being staring at it, but focus the mind on it gently and clearly, keeping the words of metta going. So you keep on saying, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy, and keeping that focus on the feeling of metta. Usually when the feeling comes up at the beginning, it will tend to be localized in a certain part of the body. Can be anywhere, it doesn't really matter where it is, but it tends to be localized somewhere. And so just focus on that feeling inside the body. Don't let the mind wander around outside the body. Even if you think you can feel the feeling of metta outside the body, just sort of like bring it back in. Actually, the feeling is happening in the mind. So it doesn't really matter where it is, because it's all just in the mind anyway. But keep it in the body, because that will make it grounded. Okay? So this is what we want. We want the meditation to be grounded and centered and focused. So keep that attention on that feeling inside the body. And so then keeping it in that location, paying attention to it, focusing on it, keeping the words of metta going. And we just stay there. Stay like that with the feeling, gently holding it. And remember those very beautiful similes the Buddha used in the Upakilesa Sutta, where he talked about holding a little bird in the hands. And if you held the bird too tightly, then you'd crush it. If you held it too loosely, then it would fly away. And so it's exactly the kind of attention you need to use when you're holding the metta, the feeling of metta. Too tight and you'll crush it, too loose it will fly away. And so you're watching it very carefully, very tenderly and very gently. And keep doing that for a long time. Keep doing it as long as you can and watch that feeling. If all goes well, if you can sustain the attention on it reasonably well and keep that focus going, then typically the feeling will become stronger, because the mind works on this feedback. You're setting up this feedback loop. The feeling of metta makes the mind feel softer and more relaxed and happy, and then that makes the feeling get better. And it is circling around in this circle. And then it becomes more and more clear to the mind, more and more steady, more and more stable. If it's not like that, if you're just watching it for a short time, the feeling goes away, then you just come back and just start again and try to bring up the feeling one more time. And gradually, as your mind gets more stable, then the feeling will become more steady and more stable. Okay, so let's try doing some guided meditation now, and let's see for the next 20 minutes or so, and we'll do some meditation just to that stage of trying to focus on the feeling of metta. Sitting quietly, allowing a sense of ease and stillness to settle through the body. Whenever thoughts come into the mind, just note them, thinking, thinking, thinking. Thinking, thinking, thinking. Resting the mind in the silent awareness between the thoughts. In that silence, noticing the mood, the emotion that you're bringing, carrying through the body. Letting the mind just be the watcher, sitting in the middle, watching everything that goes on. And when the mind feels reasonably collected, bring up the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. saying the words clearly, distinctly, evenly. Making a clean and solid foundation for the mind. Every time the mind wanders off, just bring it back, reapplying oneself to these words. May I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. And as the words become more confident and stable, then reflect on the meaning of them. Allow that dimension of meaning to emerge from the words. That pure, wholesome wish, aspiration for one's own truth, freedom from suffering, happiness, well-being. as you continue, look to see if you can notice the feeling of metta. Something that goes along with the words, but is not words. Like the shine of the light on the surface of the water. And when you notice the feeling, just gently rest the mind together with the feeling, keeping the words going, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Keeping the feeling inside the body. Holding it steady in that place where it appears.
Yeah.